Before we start our episode today, I want to talk a little bit about a hard topic, fertility. If you are one of the many women struggling to become pregnant again, just know that we're thinking of you and sending you the most positive thoughts. For mamas trying to conceive or struggling with fertility, I encourage you to check out Needed. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer egg quality support for women and sperm plus for men. These are things that are not often talked about. I wanted to share more about both of those products. Needed's egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes. It's never too early or too late to start focusing on egg quality, but for optimal results, they recommend taking egg support at least 3 months before trying to conceive or freezing the eggs. For Needed Sperm Support Plus, it combines targeted and clinically studied ingredients, pre and probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for the whole body approach to male fertility. Expertly formulated for men who are thinking of trying to conceive and for men's vitality at stages of all life. If you are pregnant or trying to conceive, or even in your postpartum stages, consider switching to Needed to get 20% off your order by using code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20 at checkout. Hello, everybody. We have our friend Liz from New York with us today. She is a mom of two and almost 2 years old, right? Your VBAC baby. Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh, 2 years since your VBAC. And then almost 6-year-old. And yeah, like I said, she lives in New York and she's going to be sharing her stories with you guys today. With her first birth, she actually had preeclampsia. So she's going to talk more about that. And then with her second birth, she didn't have preeclampsia. So I think this is kind of an important thing to talk about because sometimes, well, we know that having preeclampsia again is a possibility, but, and it might be slightly increased if you've had it, but it doesn't mean you will. So I'm hoping that we can talk a little bit more if you did do anything to try to avoid it the second one. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, but knowing that it's still okay. Like if you have preeclampsia, you can still VBAC. No, her second one, she didn't have preeclampsia, but it's, you can still VBAC if you have preeclampsia. So we're going to talk about that a little bit after your first birth too, because I want to know more. All right, we do have a review of the week today, and this is by Jess2123. It says, best podcast for VBAC. Said, I listened to the podcast after my son's birth. I learned so much that I knew I wanted a VBAC for my second birth. When I became pregnant again, I would listen to this podcast during my walks. Thanks to the wealth of knowledge that I gained, I had my unmedicated VBAC in 2023. Congratulations, Jess, on your VBAC, and thank you so much for your review. I know this year we're kind of tossing it up between review and educational pieces, but I just do want to remind you really quick that if you haven't left us a review yet, we would love it. You can push pause right now and listen or redo a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can go over to Google the VBAC link, leave us a review there. These reviews really do help us and bring us so much joy. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. So, without further ado, I want to turn the time over to you.
Thank you so much. I guess every VBAC story starts with the cesarean story, or at least there's one in there. My pregnancy journey did start with a cesarean as far as the first birth. As Megan mentioned, I am a mom of two, so my first son, I fortunately have been like reproductively very healthy and otherwise healthy my entire life. I was able to like track everything. I had regular cycles, like really no issues there. So I feel really, really blessed in that regards. I was able to get pregnant pretty easily. So I believe I got pregnant in about February 2018 for the first time. And I found out mid-March after I tested in my bathroom and just ran out with the test to my husband. Nothing super special. I think I was just kind of shocked. I remember I had gone to like a St. Patrick's Day parade and felt so tired that I said to my friends, so I'm going to go home and nap in between, that and another event. And they were all like, why are you napping? And I was like, I don't know. I'm just really tired. So I took the pregnancy test to rule out pregnancy. It was immediately positive, which was amazing. And my EDD, my estimated due date, was supposed to be Thanksgiving that year. So it was November 22nd, which was Thanksgiving 2018. And that just made me laugh because I was like, wow, what a far cry from Thanksgiving Eve spent even a decade previous. But yeah, so my pregnancy started out pretty like status quo, I would say. I definitely experienced that nausea. My morning sickness was definitely an all-day thing. So it was a little tough. I think it kind of threw me for a loop because I didn't know what to expect. I had always wanted to eat healthier, especially being pregnant, but it was like my body would not allow me to eat what I wanted, like what my brain wanted me to eat. It was a lot of carbs to start out. I know that's pretty common. I remember like when I went for my first appointment, I had called an OB's office. I'm trying to think if I think I had gone for like one well woman visit before, but I had had two friends, actually three friends, who had delivered with this OB and had good experiences. So I figured, I would give it a try. The funny thing is, like pretty much from the jump, I could tell that we weren't very aligned. Like I didn't really see eye to eye with him, but he had this nurse practitioner who was wonderful. And I feel like she like kind of drew people in because she was just like very like nurturing and calming, and she just had like that great energy. I knew obviously she wasn't going to be at my birth, but I still like stayed there.
So yeah, so can we talk about that a little bit? So
Yeah.
you had one provider that you're like, I don't know, our energy doesn't match, and then one that you're like, our energy totally matches, but then they wouldn't be birthing with you. So tell
Yeah.
me a little bit more of like what that provider was that wasn't matching your energy.
Yeah, so I guess because I had always been so healthy, like my visit, or I should say, like my experiences like with medical professionals were very limited. Like I had just gone to doctors for like routine checkups my entire life, and everything was always fine. So I think because I wasn't like very experienced in like the medical world, I almost had like this aversion to it. I just kind of was like, ah, like they're there if there's an emergency, but like it'll be fine. Everything will be fine. I'm trying to do this like as naturally as possible. And he seemed very like old school. I don't know how to describe it. Just like very set in his ways. I remember like I mean, this I'll circle back around, but like towards the end of the pregnancy, like when I had finally gotten like the gall to tell him that I really wanted to try and do this unmedicated because I was so nervous to say that. He was like, well, don't expect this baby to just fall out of you. You're a first time mom. So
What?
literally said that to me. And I was like, okay, I didn't think that, but like,
I wasn't saying that.
yeah, I wasn't saying that. I didn't think I wouldn't have to like work hard. That's not what I'm saying. So just like comments like that, the bedside manner, like what just didn't seem like very nurturing, very like by the book, quick appointments, like asking me like his little checklists of items, and that was it. Whereas I felt like his nurse practitioner, like she was very warm, had great bedside manner, like really just like cared about like mothering the mother in that situation. It wasn't just about the baby and how I was going to give birth or how I preferred to give birth. It was like the entire experience. I remember at one point she even said, like, you know, obviously, like, there is a need for testing certain things and for keeping an eye on everything. But she goes, I really just feel like if we left women more alone to like go through their pregnancies, they might be better off because it's just like we're so hands-on in the United States, I guess. And, you know, it just causes sometimes more anxiety throughout a time that's supposed to be really beautiful. So, you know, she did mention that. She reminded me of like, I don't know, like just a woman who crouched down in the field and gave birth to her babies, like in the woods. Like that's who she reminded me of. And I don't know if that's the truth for her. I never did ask, you know, anything about her birthing experiences, but like that's who she reminded me of. Just super warm, nurturing. And like, I think also I just aligned more with a female provider. It could have been just that too.
It could have been. But I mean, what you were just saying, like comments like that, if I'm being super straight, like we've interviewed providers on here that have come across really great, and then the more I've like interviewed them, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I like that. I don't know. And that can just happen. And I think that's where it comes with vetting your provider and going with who makes you feel warm and fuzzy. But at the same time, you're in this place where you're like, well, I've got this medical, we'll see how it goes. I've got this. To also like, I've got this warm, fuzzy feeling my cup over here. So it seems like it's an okay match, right?
And I also like I manipulated it to the point like where I would only make appointments when she was available throughout my pregnancy. And like to like where they finally were like, the office was like, you have to see the OB. You have to. Like he is going to be the one who's attending your birth. And I'm just like, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do that. And I just stuck with the practice, I think, because I was nervous. I was new to it. And like you said, I was getting like my warm and fuzzy cup filled by that nurse practitioner's presence. Things progressed. I finally outgrew that morning sickness by the second trimester. It was like week 12 or 13. It let up and I was feeling good. Like I was pretty energetic. I was doing yoga on a somewhat regular basis. Nutritionally, I do want to mention because I think this does play a role in kind of how things may have gone with the preeclampsia. But nutritionally, I was actually coming off of like a vegetarian diet. I had been a vegetarian for a few years. I had gotten really deep into yoga in like the early 2010s. And I became a vegetarian when I was doing teacher training for that. So I was purely vegetarian for a few years. And then I started integrating like poultry back into my diet. I ate very little because my husband also like doesn't consume a lot of meat. So we just like didn't eat a lot of meat. And I feel like I'm already kind of a picky eater. Like even as an adult, I definitely was as a child, but even as an adult, like I still have things that I just don't like. So I feel like my diet was pretty limited and I perhaps was not getting the nutrients that I needed, especially when my body like underwent this or, you know, got pregnant and was like going through this stressful
Yeah, growing a
event.
placenta and a baby, and yeah, it needed its nutrients, and
So I feel like during my pregnancy, like I kind of, especially once I started to feel good again, I kind of like ate whatever I wanted. So that whole like, I'm just going to like eat so healthy. I was just like, yeah, no, I'm eating for two. And I totally knew that's not
I
like
did
what you're
the
supposed to
same.
do.
I
But I
did
was
the
like,
same thing.
yeah, I was like, whatever. I'm feeling great. I'm going to eat it. You know, it's there. I'm going to eat it. So I get to my like 20-week anatomy scan. I'm not even sure if it was exactly at 20 weeks. And everything goes well. You know, fortunately, no complications with the baby. Oh, I had also gotten like an NIPT to find out the sex of the baby. And so I knew I was having a boy. The anatomy scan did validate that. But that like week, I don't know if it was right before or right after my anatomy scan, I noticed that I was starting to swell just on my right side of my body. My right foot was swollen. My right like ankle leg was a little swollen. And I remember like reaching out to like, I don't know, my social media like friends just like put out a status like, hey, pregnant lady here. Don't really know what's going on. Is this normal? Is this something I should bring up to my provider? What do you guys think? And there were plenty of people who were like, no, like it's totally normal to be swollen at that point. And I even said, like, it's only on one side, though. It's kind of
Yeah.
weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like, just elevate your feet, see what happens. And like, it would always go down, but it was just odd that I happened to notice just the swelling on one side of the body. So definitely interesting. Yeah. So I keep going. I'm getting like bouts of like pretty much every pregnancy symptom, but it would always be very like short-lived. Like, I definitely had some reflux, short-lived. I got sciatic pain so bad one day that I like couldn't get out of the car. I remember I was like sitting in the passenger seat and I said to my husband, like, I can't walk on my right leg right now because my sciatic nerve just like, I don't know. So I like was doing all these exercises to try and get the baby off my nerve and all of that. And everything like just waxed and waned. It wasn't, nothing was long-lived by any means. So I get to 30 weeks. I think it was like my 30-week appointment. And I believe it was the medical assistant comes in and takes my blood pressure and weight like they always do. And I don't know if it was her or the nurse practitioner that said that like I had my first high blood pressure reading. Like, oh, it's elevated a little bit. And I was like, oh, that's so strange. Like, I've been a 120 over 80 girl like this entire time. And like my whole life, I've never had blood pressure issues. And they're like, okay, well, it's something to keep an eye on. Let's see, we're gonna let you lay on your side, see if we can have it come down. We'll take it at the end of the appointment again. And it did, it would come down. But they definitely were like, we're gonna keep this in our back pocket and just, we might have to have additional monitoring if this progresses. I didn't really know what high blood pressure in pregnancy could mean. I really like, so of course, I go to Dr. Google, like a good pregnant lady does, right?
Yep, a lot of us. I'm guilty. Guilty. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so it could be, hypertension in pregnancy, or it could turn into preeclampsia. And so I was reading all the things that how this could turn and what that all meant. So in the back of my head, like I always thought, like, okay, I'm aware of what could indicate preeclampsia, but like that's not going to be me. I am a healthy person, right? Like I've always been healthy my entire life. There shouldn't be any issues while I'm pregnant. And that wasn't the case, unfortunately. But I did go in like a few more times and I did get elevated blood pressure readings. So I don't know what week I was, but I know it was the beginning of October. I saw this other nurse practitioner who was not warm and fuzzy. She was like new to the practice and she saw me. She took my pressure and she was very like you could see the alarm in her face. And but she wasn't saying much. She handed me this like sucks this stuck with me to this day. It's just like so crazy. She handed me this paper. And the hospital that I was delivering at is a small community hospital, but it's affiliated with like this Catholic healthcare system where I live. So they have a few different hospitals that are also within that same system. And she just gave me this paper that had like a listing of all these numbers for these different departments at these hospitals. And she just said, you need to call them and make an appointment. And I'm like, I have literally no idea what this is about. She's like, your pressure is high. You need to go make an appointment with them. But that's like all she said to me.
But like
So,
for
handed,
what?
yeah,
Yeah.
like what is happening right now? I remember even that day she asked me about like my face. She was just like, is your face swollen? Like, does your face normally look like that? I was like, I have a very round face. Like, I have big cheeks. Like, to me, my face doesn't look different. Yeah. So she handed me that paper, told me to call. And I was like, like the good patient I am, sure, I'll call. So I called. I found out it was maternal fetal medicine, which for those of you out there that don't know what that is, that's a high-risk doctor. And I had no idea. So this is my first experience with that. I did call, I made an appointment, and they also had my OB office had me do a 24-hour urine drop or urine drip, however you want to call that. So
Urine
that's something.
catch, maybe.
Yeah,
Urine
urine
catch.
catch, yeah, probably. And so for those of you who don't know what that is, you literally just they give you a jug from a lab and you have to put your urine into that jug for an entire 24 hours. They test it and they're checking to see if there's any protein that is spilling into your urine because that could indicate decreased kidney
And
function, which is,
preeclampsia, yeah.
yeah, that is a symptom of preeclampsia. So I did do that. I went and saw MFM and in the office there, my pressures were labile. They even called them that, labile. It had elevated a little bit, probably like in the 130s over 90s, but then like by the end of the appointment, it had come down. My labs for that urine catch did indicate that there was protein present, but it wasn't within a diagnosable threshold. It was like below that lab threshold. So I basically like wasn't diagnosable, but they were like, now we're gonna watch you. So, most people like to see their babies on ultrasounds. Like that's an exciting thing. I became so fed up with having to go in. I was like at that point a frequent flyer and I was going in weekly earlier than like a pregnancy that wasn't having any sort of complications. And I was getting not only an ultrasound, but a NST every time I went in. So I'd have to lay there for 45 minutes while they looked at the baby's heart tones and everything. Yeah, I just at that point I was just like really stressed out because I was like, is that what this is turning into? But like I don't have preeclampsia. I think I also saw my OB within that time frame, and he kind of mentioned like if this progresses, we will be doing a 37-week induction. And I was like, okay. So gonna keep that in mind, but like again, this isn't gonna progress to that because I'm healthy and we're gonna make it. We're gonna make it past 37 weeks. I probably wouldn't get the type of delivery that I wanted, and that's probably something I should mention. If I was induced at 37 weeks, I was preparing to have an unmedicated birth, a vaginal birth, and I was even taking like a hypnobirthing class to try and like do as much like labor as long as I could at home. My whole thing was like, I didn't want to go to the hospital until I needed the hospital or until I felt I needed the hospital. So, here I am thinking, like, okay, I want this unmedicated, like low intervention birth, but I'm having all these interventions right now because they need to monitor me. There's some sort of issue that might be brewing. Yeah. So I already said I went to MFM and all of that. My symptoms at that point were mostly swelling. I was getting very swollen at this point, and I had that pitting edema in my legs, so I could like press my finger
And it
into my leg
stayed.
and it stayed. And then my feet were like little loaves of bread. Like I'll ne my feet will never forget what they went through. My husband would just like massage them every single night, trying to get the fluid to move like out of my tissues. It was kind of crazy. I had another like experience with a different OB who was not my OB, but I was out at a like family event at this restaurant, and this woman approached me, told me she was an OB, and asked me if I was okay because my legs and my feet did not look so great.
What?
Yeah, I was just standing in the lobby minding my business and she's like, "Are you okay?" Like as if like I'm not being monitored, but like
Oh my
do you think I'm
gosh.
just
Funny.
going through this free, like, unaware
Yeah.
of what's happening? Yeah. So that was interesting. She said that she was an OB. Yeah, so I went to for weekly NSTs, the ultrasound. Everything looked great with the baby. He was never under any sort of distress, no like concerns of intrauterine growth restriction, nothing like that. But my pressures just kept being labile. I actually borrowed like a blood pressure cuff so I could monitor at home. And there were some mornings where I'd like lay down on the couch after I woke up and my blood pressures were reaching into those like 140s over 90, 91 maybe, and I just would cry. I was just like hysterical, like why is this happening? I don't want to go to, labor and delivery right now. I don't want to be monitored. I'm already being monitored so much. There were probably some weeks towards the end where it was more than once that I went into my OB's office for monitoring. So, fortunately, we made it through that 37-week mark. We made it all the way to essentially the end, and we get to Thanksgiving Eve, right? So my due date is the next day. I'm at 39 and 6, and this was one of those appointments where they said, like, you have to see the OB. And I, just kicked and screamed, not really, but in my head, like, fine, I'll see him. So the medical assistant comes in, takes my pressure and my weight. He doesn't say anything, leaves the room. He comes in, takes my pressure and my weight, and he asked me to meet him in his office. Yes.
Really?
So, yes. So, I get myself dressed out of the gown that they had given me, and I go meet him in his fancy office. And he's like, your pressure is very high today, very high. So you're going to be going to labor and delivery straight from here. He's like, I have a few meetings that I have to attend to here, but I will meet you over there in a few hours. And I was like, obviously on the verge of tears. And I'm just like, can I please stop home and get my stuff? Like, I have bags, I have a
Yeah.
dog.
If you can go to your meetings, I can go to my house, right?
And yeah, my OB's office was like maybe 12 to 13 minutes away from my house. And then, and the hospital was about 5 minutes down the road. So I was just like, can I just go home, grab my stuff? And he's like, no, go straight to the hospital. And he goes, and you're probably going to have a cesarean. So this is
What?
after I tell him my like natural birth plans, right? Or my unmedicated, definitely wanting a vaginal birth. And I was like, what? Like, literally, that was when the tears, the waterworks really started. And I was just like, there's like no shot at me having a vaginal birth. And he's just like, well, I'm going to be putting you on medication to prevent seizures. So you can either labor with that and have it cancel out my induction medication, or you can just like
Oh.
be calm and go to a cesarean. Like, go to the OR essentially.
What were your pressures? Sorry.
170 over 110 that day.
Okay.
So high.
Yeah.
But like, it's still like
But
funny, but
like
not
he's
funny.
pretty
Like,
much, yeah, no. Like he's
and
like,
like,
you can do this, but it's not gonna work. Or you could just calm down and do this.
yeah, that it was
Ugh.
like, those aren't options though. That's not really an option, right? That's what you're telling
No.
me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had to like, I called my mom, I called my husband frantic. Like, I was just flipping out. I get out of the office, I'm like crying in the parking lot, telling everybody they're telling me to go right to the hospital. So of course my husband rushes home from work. He was at work. It was a Wednesday. And he got my dog, had to bring my dog to my mom's, like, grab our bags to the extent that they were packed. And he met me there. I was crying. Like, I walked myself into the hospital. It was the most surreal thing. Like, checked myself in, knowing that I was going to come out with a human being,
Yeah.
which was bizarre. And when I finally got to labor and delivery, like, my nurse was so sweet, but I was crying so much that she was just like, are you going to be okay? And I was like, I really want a vaginal delivery. And she's just like, honey, she goes, I understand. I do think he's making the right choice. I do think you're making the right choice, which, like, again, I don't really feel like I had a choice in that
Yeah, you're
instance.
like I wasn't really given a choice. Can't
Yeah.
even, yeah.
And she also was like, she was trying to like relate. She's like, I've had three cesareans. Like, I promise you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And I was just like, I've never even had a tooth pulled. Like, I don't know if I could do this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so my husband arrived. Again, I'm just crying. He's trying to like cheer me up, trying to keep our eyes on the prize, the fact that we are going to hopefully have a healthy baby at the end of all this. And
Yeah.
I want to say it was probably between check-in and when my OB arrived and like scrubbed himself in, it was probably about 3 hours. Yeah. And I walked into the OR, another bizarre experience. Like, just walked in, like, okay. So everybody scrubs in. There's a whole host of people in there, including my nurse. And, I had never had surgery. So they're giving me all the instructions as to like how I need to lean forward so that they can put, it's a spinal block, I think, right? And that at that point, the anesthesiologist. And it was so bizarre. It felt like the most claustrophobic thing. If any of you have ever had cesareans, hopefully you can relate to me, but like feeling the numbness just go up your legs.
It is very strange. I walked in for my second one. With my first one, I just had like an epidural, but the second one, I had a spinal.
Yeah. So, I mean, so bizarre. Then, like, I had already mentioned I was so swollen. So, like, they had to just like take my like very swollen, like, I felt like a beached whale and just like take my body parts and put them onto this operating table because I couldn't move, like, once
Yeah.
obviously the spinal had activated. So that was bizarre. But my husband, I mean, this man, he is the calmest person, the nicest person I know. Thank God for him and his presence on that day. We just like, he kept me nice and calm. Everybody was really, really nice in the OR. The only thing I happened to notice at one point was like they had my blood pressure cuff on. Like, that's why I'm here, right? Because my blood pressures are so high. And it had slipped down to my wrist. So I had my arms out. I don't think my arms were strapped down. I don't remember that. I had them out and I like look over, like to the extent that I could to the anesthesiologist, like, hey, does somebody want to maybe put this cuff on? Because that's why I'm here. You know, that's why we're in this position right now. But yeah, my husband and I, we just like chatted and laughed the entire surgery. So everything worked out really well with the spinal. I did not feel any pain. You know, they
Good.
did talk me through to an extent about like what I would feel as far as like tugging or pulling or pressure. And my son was fortunately born really healthy, like
Good.
screaming, you know, great Apgar score, the whole nine. And now he came, and oh my God, what a feeling. It was like, obviously, I was so emotional because of how the birth had gone
Yeah.
and what had led me there. But like, I don't know, becoming a parent and seeing like your child for the first time, you can't really describe that.
I
It's
know.
amazing. I have really nice photos and video that the nurse took of like, they brought the baby over to me, they didn't do skin to skin with me, which like, again, I had all these like birth plans, preferences, and like none of that came to fruition. Like none of that pertained to my OR situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was so happy and also so sad. I don't know how to describe
Yeah.
it. It was like the
That yeah.
happiest and saddest day of my whole life up until that point.
We're going to take a quick break to continue talking about fertility. I know many of our beautiful women of strength listening join us right after their cesarean birth. And when you're in your postpartum stages, many of your nutrition needs actually increase. And if you're thinking about having another baby, I invite you to take a moment to educate yourself on the support that our favorite prenatal supplement Needed offers for both fertility and postpartum. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer eggs quality support for women and sperm support for men. Again, this is not something we often talk about. Male fertility impacts conception and a healthy pregnancy, and it is in decline due to stress, toxins, aging, and other lifestyle factors. Hormone and gut health of your partner directly influences sperm quantity and quality, and ultimately the DNA passed from sperm to baby. I love that Needed not only thinks about the female fertility, but also about the male fertility. Needed does an amazing job thinking about and supporting us women through the fertility journey. They offer prenatals, omega-3s, antioxidant, rich in egg quality support supplements, and it is formulated by prenatal health practitioners to help you and your eggs thrive. You are born with all of your egg cells, or oocytes. And the oocyte takes 3 to 4 months to mature before ovulation. Needed egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes, and it's never too early or too late to focus on egg quality. So we hope you can check out thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off with code VBAC20. Again, that is VBAC20 at thisisneeded.com. Back to today's show. Let's take a moment to talk about Coterie wipes because they're just as amazing as their diapers. These wipes are made from 100% plant-based fibers and are up to 30% larger than most other brands, making them perfect for even the messiest of situations. They're also hypoallergenic and dermatologist tested, so they're safe for newborns and even eczema-prone skin. One of our team members shared that these wipes have been a game changer, gentle enough for delicate skin, but durable enough to get the job done with fewer wipes. They've even earned the National Eczema Association's Seal of Acceptance. You guys, you can pair these with Coterie diapers for a high-performance diaper duo. And do not forget, you can get 20% off with code VBAC20 of your first order of $40 or more. Add a pack of these incredible wipes to your order to see the difference.
So recovery was interesting. I feel like I got maybe 5 hours of sleep in the hospital total. I was on a magnesium drip, excuse me. People had told me that the side effects could be a little bit gnarly with that, but I fortunately didn't find anything like abnormal. I think I had so much adrenaline, but I did try to like get my son to latch, and he was having a really hard time latching. They had a lactation consultant from the hospital come in and see me, and I could not get him to latch. And I happened to notice that his tongue was like really tethered, super
Okay.
tethered. Like I could see the tie was really far forward and he like couldn't lift his tongue. So I kept telling them, I was like, he can't like lift his tongue up the way that I feel like he needs to. And they just kept telling me like how to hold my own body to try and, breastfeed properly. And I'm like, I don't think that that's the problem though. So that was really challenging. They did want me to stay like extra time for some monitoring. So the next day was Thanksgiving, right? So I don't think my OB wanted to be there. It was a holiday, right? And he took his sweet time coming in because they wouldn't even let me eat. That was the thing. I was on magnesium. They brought breakfast in at like 7 and he strolls in at like 10:30. So I just like watched my breakfast get cold in the corner. So that was interesting. But yeah, so I think at that point, if you had like a cesarean without complications, they were looking at like about a 48 hour stay. But they asked me to stay an additional day because my pressures were still like labile. They were still elevated. I did get put on, I can't remember the name of medication, but it was blood pressure medication. I was taking like Motrin for pain management for, the hospital grade Motrin for my cesarean. I cannot even describe what it was like trying to get up and walk around that first time after surgery. It's insane. Like that was something I didn't expect. But yeah, I didn't get much sleep. And the last day that I was there, my dog had gotten into a place in my mom's house that like she couldn't get him. Like he had like gotten into something and she couldn't reach him. So she was like kind of like flipping out. Like she called my husband, she didn't call me, and just told him like, listen, like you have to come get the dog. I can't get him. So he did. I told him like it's fine. It's fine. You can leave. And while he was gone, I had friends come and visit me. There were still visitors pre-COVID. And the covering physician came in because now we're at that. I had my son on Wednesday. Thursday was Thanksgiving and I saw my OB. And then there were covering physicians for Friday and Saturday. So we're like at Friday now, Friday evening. And he came in and saw me and he's like, you know what? I might be able to, what do they call it, discharge you tonight. And so I got so excited because I was like, this is my first experience with having a newborn baby, right? My husband is trying to go deal with my dog. Like, how awesome would it be if we could just go home tonight? So I got super excited. He said this right in front of my friends too. And he comes back in a short while later and was like, I just looked at your chart. I looked at your pressures. Like, didn't clear out the room, nothing. And he's like, you know what? I can't discharge you, not with pressures like this. I can't do that. And he's like, and the covering physician tomorrow won't be able to discharge you any sooner than like late afternoon, early evening, because that is when he will be here. And I was like, okay. So here I am in my head thinking, like, I could go home tonight. And now you're telling me I might be able to go home tomorrow afternoon or evening. Like, I'm already very hormonal, I'm very emotional. My husband's not here. So my friends wound up leaving and I just sobbed. I just sobbed in my room. Like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. Like, why can't my body get it together? Like, why can't I just have like normal blood pressures again? Yeah. We did wind up getting discharged the next day, but that was like, I remember that physician just being so like the last straw for me in that experience. Like, you didn't have to say anything at all. And then you also said it in front of all my friends. So, yeah.
So you didn't stay with this provider, did you?
I did not stay
For
with
your
this provider. No, absolutely not.
VBAC? Okay.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I guess I should probably get into that story, right?
No, this has been great. This has been
Yeah.
great. So you were like done. You went home, you're like, last straw, no more,
Yeah.
never again.
Yeah, and I did have my son assessed by a lactation consultant, and she said that was like one of the most severe tongue ties that she had ever seen. She did recommend a release, and I was like, 4 days postpartum at this point, my son is. I wound up like supplementing with formula which was something I
Couldn't
so
feed
didn't
him.
want to do, but I was just like, this kid is starving. He can't latch properly. And I did. I went and saw a specialist and I had his tongue and lip ties both revised. And It was severe. That was a severe tongue tie. I know people have mixed feelings about that, but he needed it, and like even in my, opinion as a layperson. But yeah, pretty much immediately I knew I wanted things to be different the following like pregnancy and birth. And I think I started thinking about my VBAC probably that day. It was probably the day I gave birth to my son. Like
And you're like,
this cannot be how this goes every time. So it took me like a really long time to even want to conceive again. I not only like did I have all these complicated feelings about my birth because like yes, I did have a healthy baby. Yes, I ultimately weaned off of blood pressure medication and my body came back to however you want to phrase normal, right? But like I had this experience that I was holding on to a lot of trauma. And unfortunately, like 4 months, my son was 4 months old and my mom suddenly passed away. So yeah, it was unexpected. It was sudden. I still to this day I'm like shocked that I didn't lose my milk supply, but I was able to pump in the hospital and get my son milk. That is a crazy surreal experience, like losing a parent, but like I don't think that there's much more cruel than losing someone that you care about so much. My mom and I were so close in a postpartum period that's already complicated by birth trauma, right? So now I had this grief for my mom. I had this grief for the birth experience I didn't have. And I think that largely contributed to me waiting to conceive again. I also like I wanted to try and find out as much as I could about what causes preeclampsia. Like what exactly goes on in the body that would cause that to happen. And funny thing is the verdict is still kind of out there. They're not exactly sure what causes it.
And there's things that we can do to try to help avoid it, but there's nothing specifically that's like, if you do this, you for sure won't have it.
Yeah.
It's the
I
same thing
know.
with gestational diabetes. Like, it's within the placenta,
Right.
but we don't know. It needs to be further studied.
Yeah. I have heard that it has to do with the father.
I have
Have you heard
heard
that
this as
too?
well. Yeah,
Yeah.
there's a connection. Yes.
Yeah. So I wound up, I remember I saw like a home birth midwife just for blood work between having my son and conceiving my daughter. And she did mention like preeclampsia is largely a first-time pregnancy illness. Largely. Doesn't mean you can't have it a second time, but she was the one who mentioned to me like you have a higher instance of getting it again if you have the same father for your child. And I'm like, well, I'm married and
Well,
yes.
I am gonna have the same father, so
So, that was always in the back of my head. It's like, okay, well, subsequent pregnancy, less of a chance, but same father, more of a chance. So I was just like wondering like what my odds were. It definitely was there in on my mind for a long time. I studied as much as I could about what could cause it. I read Lily Nichols' Real Food for Pregnancy cover to cover. Obsessed with her. Obsessed with everything she has to say. There
Yep.
it is.
Right here and right here. Right
Ah,
here. Real food
my
for
favorite.
gestational diabetes. Real food for pregnancy. Food is powerful, you guys. It's very powerful, but it's
Yeah.
changed over the years. So,
I know. And she's just like, I love how she presents the research because
yes.
she's the one who really delves into it and presents it in such a digestible way. It was such an easy read. And I was like, okay, here are some things that I can control. Can I control everything? No, but here are the things that I intend to do the next time. So my mom passed away in April 2019. So it took, again, a few years, but by spring 2022, I was kind of feeling ready. And my husband and I, we kind of discussed it. It was like a little like passing, like, hey, should we try and get pregnant again? And it was one time. So it's not lost on me how lucky I am in that sense that it took me one shot to get
Which
pregnant.
is awesome.
Yeah. I found out my EDD for that pregnancy was going to be on Christmas Day.
Oh
So,
my.
yeah. And I just said, wow, I can't avoid major winter holidays, apparently, with my pregnancies.
Oh my gosh.
So we did not find out that we were having a girl, but she did wind up being a girl. Spoiler alert. But yeah, I was really not feeling well that pregnancy. It was like aversions times 1,000. I had this really like bizarre one that I had never even heard anybody discuss before, but like I had so much extra saliva in my mouth. And I'm sorry, like that might
Oh.
sound disgusting. It sounds like, or it felt like when right before you're going to get sick, how your mouth fills
Yeah.
up with saliva, but all
Yeah.
day.
Your saliva glands were just like excess all the time,
It
giving you all the
was,
spit possible.
yeah, it was disgusting.
That is interesting. I don't think I've ever heard of that.
It was terrible. And fortunately, I was working from home. I was working full time, but I was at home, and I would just like walk around with like a spit cup. Like how disgusting! Like I literally, it disgusts me to even talk about it. It's just like, what is happening? And I was waiting for those aversions to let up because like I couldn't stand the smell of coffee, which like I love coffee. Like I basically the sight of anything that wasn't like pure oxygen was disgusting to me. Like the sight of like opening up my refrigerator was like, ugh, you know? Yeah, exactly. The gag reflex. And that lasted my second pregnancy. It lasted until like 22 weeks. So it was rough. I joke that I was horizontal for 2022, and like that's not even like a joke. Like I really was laying down. I had so much guilt because my son was so energetic at this point. He was nearly 4 years old and he had so much energy. He wanted to do things, and I like could not muster up the energy most of the time. My husband was the default parent, and I never thought that that would be the case. That was really, really hard. That was probably the hardest part of the pregnancy. But yeah, so I started to really actively plan for that VBAC, right? And I started to see a hospital-based group of midwives. I loved them. Every single provider I saw, I had gone for well woman visits between as well. But every provider that I saw was just like amazing. Like I didn't have any bad things to say. And I knew that I would be with them if I was in the hospital. But deep down in my heart, I really, really wanted to be at home. I had seen so many beautiful home birth videos, like when I did hypnobirthing. And I also like I associated hospitals with sickness, right? I had been there because I developed preeclampsia. I had been there when my mom was sick and passing away. It was a sick place, and I wanted to be at a place where I felt most safe. And for me, that was home. And I know people have a lot of feelings and opinions about that all over. But for me, that was what I wanted to do. And I wanted to do all of the things to keep myself low risk and able to birth at home if possible, while still making plans for transfer and even surgery if it was needed again. So I wasn't like ignorant to the fact that it could turn into that, but I was going to try the things. Where I live, there actually aren't a lot of home birth midwives who support HVACs, VBACs at home. But I found one and we clicked immediately. Like when I spoke to her on the phone, I was like, she is my girl. Like I need her. I need her energy at my birth. We met in person a few weeks later and it just was like, she was so gung ho about it. She had mentioned that her mom actually had an HVAC. And she witnessed her mom having that HVAC. So, like, just ingrained into her. And she, like, really supported me with, like, advice on diet. She helped me with supplementation, which I was on a lot of supplements for this pregnancy. I'm not even gonna front. I had so many alarms set for all my supplements daily. So, yes, I was trying to support myself with diet, of course, but I was trying to also fill in any gaps that might be there with supplementation. Because I just know my diet's not perfect. And it certainly wasn't when I was feeling terrible.
No one's is. No one's is. Like, that's just the reality of it. Like, we can be eating the best we can, and we still are often falling short. And that's why supplements are really great.
So I also like, I was seeing a Webster certified chiropractor the entire time to get, you know, myself into the best alignment to have that vaginal birth. The supplementation, I was doing Reformer Pilates. I had started it the year before and I did it all the way until the very end of November 2022. So I was staying active. I was really trying. I basically said, like, I will do almost anything to keep myself at home. That was really like my motto. Yeah, I really can't say I was totally worry-free. I was waiting for something to go wrong. I was.
Yeah.
I was trying to keep this brave face, this like, okay, I can do this. I can birth the way that I want to. I can have this, complication-free birth and pregnancy experience. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, when is the next shoe gonna drop?
Mean, it's what you've experienced in the back, story, the last story. And it's hard, like, even if we've processed through things, there's still sometimes those little, just creeping thoughts that come in.
Yeah, that is for sure. My midwife did recommend that I get a third trimester ultrasound, and that was more for, it was for her, but it was also for me. She never ever said you have to do this. Everything was really a conversation. The appointments with, especially with a home birth midwife, I mean, an hour long or more sometimes, just amazing. I loved going to see her. So I did get that third trimester ultrasound. It was more to check to make sure that the placenta wasn't compromised in any way, whether there, it was in a good position. There was no accreta. That was something that we really wanted to rule out to keep me low risk and at home. And I agreed with that. I am not anti-medicine by any means. I just want to put that out there. Just because I chose to have a home birth, I do respect medical professionals and their jobs and the need for surgery, but I wanted to keep myself in a place again that I felt safe. And that's really what it came down to. So I, in my head, had mentally prepared to go to 41 weeks. I think that's like where I prepared to go because I had learned that many, many women, especially first-time laboring women, because I did not labor with my son. I neglected to mention that I didn't labor at all. So first-time laboring women will go into labor typically, but somewhere between 40 and 41 weeks. That's like, post dates is very, very common. So in my head, I prepared to go to 41 weeks and we got there. We got to Christmas, got through there. I was like, I'm gonna, somewhere before New Year's Eve. No, nothing. So we got to New Year's Eve and here I am in my 41st week and I'm just trying to keep myself calm. Like, what am I gonna do? I cannot go to 42 weeks. I can't do it. Mentally, I can't do it. Physically, I can't do it. I'm going to wind up at the hospital. Like, of course, all these like negative thoughts are swirling. I went for another like adjustment with the chiropractor. I went for an acupuncture session. I went for a few of them, but I did like induction points with my acupuncturist. And I was just trying to do all the things, curb walking. I did the mile circuit, like all the things to try and help this baby engage. So we get to 41 M1 for me, which is a Monday. And I was woken up with contractions that felt like period cramps. That's how I would describe them. Around 2 a.m., I started timing them. They were like 12 to 15 minutes apart at that point, but they weren't letting up. They were consistent. I woke up my husband getting all excited, like, oh my gosh, this might be it. Here we are. And they weren't getting closer, but they weren't easing up. So they kind of just continued like that for the rest of the day. I had gotten up from the couch at one point and I felt like this small trickle, but I went into the bathroom and it didn't look like anything to me. Like it didn't look like much. There wasn't like a huge gush of fluid, nothing. So I kind of was like, oh, I think it's probably just like discharge or maybe part of my mucus plug. I have no idea. I have literally no idea. But I was like, nothing seems off to me. And it wasn't enough fluid to be concerning. But I did text my midwife to update her. And she kind of mentioned to me, like, a lot of women will drop into like more active labor. When the sun goes down, things get quiet, it starts to get calmer. I can almost guarantee that we're going to have a baby like some point in the next 24 hours. So I go to bed that night and thinking like I'm going to wake up Tuesday and probably either be having a baby or have a baby already. And I woke up Tuesday and I was still pregnant. There I
You're
was.
like, this is not what I was thinking.
Like, what? And I remember, like, I would wake up with a contraction. But again, they were like 12 to 15 minutes apart. So I would go to sleep between no issues and just like wake up, breathe through the contraction, and go back to sleep. And that's kind of how the whole night went. I just couldn't believe I was still pregnant. I really was starting to get a little down on myself. I was like, these aren't coming closer together. They're not intensifying. They're not letting up, but there's nothing like really happening at this point. And so I texted my midwife again that morning, Tuesday morning, and she said she needed to come see me for the 41-week appointment anyway. So she said that she would come by that day. She was going to come to my house. And then we get to like mid-morning. It was probably like around 10, 10:30, and my contractions stopped. Like literally up and left.
Oh.
Like, what is happening right now? I can't. I was in shock, literally in shock, especially because labor had been going on for over 24 hours. It was absurd to me. But she's like, don't worry, I'm going to come see you for your appointment anyway. When she arrived later that day, I did ask her to do a cervical check because at this point, I'm like, something has had to happen. Like, there, whether the baby moved down into a better station or I'm a little bit more dilated or, just more engagement, like whatever it is, I just want to know at this point. So she did. She said, I'll go in there. I can do a cervical check. And if I can get in there, would you like me to do a membrane sweep? And I was like, I would love that. Anything to get this going. Let's get the party started. So I'm at my house. She does the cervical check. She's like, I can do a membrane sweep. And as she basically finishes up, I feel this gush of fluid.
Your water.
Yeah. And well, she goes, like, she kind of like stopped. And I said, was that fluid? And she's like, I'm going to make sure it's amniotic fluid. I have the test strip. And of course, it lit up like a highlighter. She's like, yes. She goes, so guess what? We're going to go after a baby today. Like, we are going to get this party started. I had kept telling her I can't go to 42 weeks. And she kept like saying, like, let's not go to 42 weeks. Like, you'll be fine. We're going to get it moving. And here we are. She did mention I was like, at that point, I guess like about 3 to 4 centimeters dilated. So pretty good. But she's like, I can offer you, I have a Foley. I can offer you a Foley balloon just to put a little bit more pressure on the cervix, and maybe we can get those contractions to start up again and then hopefully come closer together. So she did. She put that Foley in and she waited with me at my house and we just chatted. And it came out like a short time after. It was like it took very little. I didn't have discomfort with that, thankfully.
That's good. I
Yeah.
mean, and it probably just meant to show like your cervix was starting to come forward. Things were going.
It was going, yeah. Yeah, so again, she stayed with me. And once the Foley came out, she kind of like just advised me to like put on like some sort of like protective underwear, like whether it was the adult diapers or a pad, because now we knew that like my fluid was at least leaking, right? But it wasn't coming out consistently anymore. And I don't think it fully came out. Like it wasn't like a big enough gush for it to be all of the fluid, if that makes sense. So she told me to do a few things. She's like, I'm going to head out. And she goes, you're going to call me when you need me, which at that point I was like, I have no idea what that means, but okay. And she's like, and here are the things that you can do. She's like, obviously nothing in there anymore because we know that your amniotic, sac is open at
It's
some,
broken.
yeah, exactly. But she said, you could do some pumping. You could use some clary sage essential oil. You can She gave me the her TENS machine, and she's like, you could try the TENS machine. And I had never known that you could actually use that, like, not for pain management. Like I only thought it was for pain management. So I was like, that's so interesting. So she's like, do the pumping, do that, all that. So I did. I did one session, I think, before. Like, I put my son to bed for the last time as an only child. And I did. I went and laid down with him and just knew like that was probably going to be the last time that he would wake up, or, the last time he had woken up as an only child. And then I did it one more time. And not only did my contractions come back, I started timing them on the app and I'm watching them get closer. Like, they're going from 10 minutes to 8 minutes to 7 minutes to 5 minutes, and I'm just watching them like, oh my gosh. So we get to like maybe 11, 11:30 at night, and it's just me and my husband there, and they are 3 minutes apart and they're not easing up and they are getting intense. So there it was. They came
And
back.
labor begins.
Oh, it began. It began. I have so many interesting photos that my doula wound up taking. Thank God for her. Not only for the photos, but for everything that she did during the labor and delivery. It was intense. It gets intense, or in my experience, like active labor, when you get the breaks between the contractions and you are able to rest, like I took every opportunity to rest. But everybody, My doula was trying to guide me like into different like positions. She would help by like putting like a warm compress on my back at times. She would like encourage even like location changes in my house just to see if like I could use like the toilet, or she told me to get into the shower at one point and I was like, I'm too claustrophobic in here. Like I didn't like that, but she was trying to get me to try like different things, right? But it was so intense. And the craziest part for me was transition. That was truly an out-of-body experience. Everybody was doing these like hands-on manipulations, my husband, my doula, but like I could not do anything but just sway. I was standing, swaying back and forth in my living room, arms up. Like, why were my arms up? I have no idea, but they were up and I was doing like that horse lips breathing. Yeah. And it was just like what my body did intuitively. And I just like at that point wasn't really getting a break. It was just insane. So that was intense, out of body. I cannot replicate that level of pain in my head. There's just like no doing that. But I knew that even if I needed to transfer, which I wasn't planning, but if even if I need to do that for pain management, I couldn't sit down in a car. I was at that point, you know? And so I thought to myself, the only way to this is through this. Like, that is it. You got to do it. We're just going to do it. So I knew that in my head. At no point did the pain concern me, though. I mean, was it so intense and crazy? Yeah. But it was never like there's something wrong. So that was really good. I didn't think anything negative during that time, except that, like, yeah, I was in an intense amount of pain. But it was like pain with a purpose, if that makes sense.
Productive.
Yes. So in the meantime, my doula, she had set up a birth pool because I definitely wanted to try to be in the pool when I gave birth, but I wasn't sure how I'd feel about the water since I didn't really like the shower experience. It took a while because like the hose kept like slipping off of like our faucet or whatever. So they had to boil pots of water. I just remember like my doula walking back and forth. In the meantime, they did call my midwife, somebody did, and she showed up with her assistant. So there were like three or four adults trying to hold me in transition, right? Like, or do some sort of physical manipulations and then pour hot water into this birth pool.
Oh
Yeah, it was very interesting. But yeah, my contractions at that point were 30 seconds apart and they were lasting like a minute and a half. It was intense.
Yes.
But the pool was finally filled at 6:45 in the morning on Wednesday. And the only reason why I know that is because we have pictures of me right before I got into the pool. And when I got in, my body just relaxed. And I didn't think I was going to be wanting to like be in a supine position at all, or like be on my bottom at all, because I couldn't have even tried to sit on land. But once I got into the pool, everything relaxed. And it was like, oh, this is what I needed. This is what I needed. I needed some relief. I also kept telling everybody how tired I was. Like anybody who walked past me, I was like, I'm so tired. And they're like, yeah, no, we know. We know, but we're going to keep working. But yeah, I was in there for a really short time and I had heard of this before, but to actually experience it is next level. I had like the fetal ejection reflex. So I did not even have another cervical check, nothing. My body just started pushing that baby down and out. And it, like, I couldn't have stopped it if I wanted to. I was making the most primal sounds. I have video of it. Like low guttural sounds. And it was probably going on for about 15 minutes. And my son walked down. I heard his little pitter patter of his feet. And he walked down. And my stairs go right into my living room where I was. And the whole time, the most nerve-wracking part I think of having a home birth for me was like that I knew he was going to be home with us. And there really wasn't an adult aside from my husband and like my birth support team who I wanted in my birthing space. So I there was no other option of anybody to take care of him besides my husband if it came to that. And I think in the back of my head, that was like the most anxiety-inducing part of this. So down he walks. And of course, he's like hiding. He sees like these three other adults in our living room. I'm in the tub, like groaning and like, ugh, you know, like, and he's a little nervous. He's a little guy. Fortunately, I think it was either the birth assistant or my doula handed him his little digital camera that I had actually bought as a gift from the baby
Oh,
for him.
fun.
Yeah. And she encouraged him. She's like, why don't you take some pictures? Take some pictures of mommy and daddy. And the minute that she said that and he started to do that, he like calmed down and just wanted to be in it and part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I told him, like, like mommy's making some interesting noises, but I'm okay. I'm safe. I'm okay. And he was like really just really good about it. And so I feel like all that anxiety like went away, thankfully. So
Yeah. That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah. I noticed my midwife was starting to gather her supplies. And I was like, in my head, I actually probably said it out loud, like, wait, we're doing this here? And she was like, yeah. I was like, I'm having a baby here in this room. She's like, yeah. I was like, I don't need to go to the hospital. She's like, no. You're okay. And yeah, my body just kept pushing the baby out. And it was an hour, not even an hour. It was like less than an hour from when I first got into the pool until my daughter was out. My husband got to reach down and kind of like put his hands there while as she came out. He felt her really chubby cheeks. She has big cheeks like me and her ear and brought her up to my chest. And I was just in shock. I couldn't A, believe that I had done that. But then of course, like I look and I see that she's a girl and I just knew my mom had sent me her. Like that's how I felt. So it was so
That just gave me
special.
the chills.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
And
That is
yeah.
so beautiful. And I love that your son was able to be involved
Oh,
and that
yeah.
you could feel your mom. Like, oh, huge congrats.
Thank you
Huge
so
congrats.
much. Yes, I named her. My mom's name was Faith. And so my daughter's middle name is Faye because everybody who loved my mom called her Faye. She was Aunt Faye to like everybody, every cousin. So my daughter's name is Luna Faye. So she is her namesake and she's amazing. And like you said, I can't believe she's almost two. Like,
I
I can't believe this was almost
know.
2 years ago.
2 years ago, I know sometimes, we get so many submissions, and sometimes we can't get to everybody, but it
Yeah.
does take a while sometimes. And so I'm so
Yeah.
glad that you're able to come and still record your beautiful stories and give us
Aww.
so much detail of each one and guidance and experience and yeah, just I'm just so happy for you.
Thank you so much. I don't think I'll ever come down from that high, that birth high. Like, I think I'll be riding it out for the rest of my life. And I'm not sure I'm going to have any more children. I think we're pretty much done, but I would love to give birth like that 1,000 more times. It was the redemptive story that I needed. It helped so much with my previous birth trauma, and it made me feel so strong. I have never felt more strong and more powerful than that experience. I don't think I ever will.
Well, and there's so much that went into it, like time, preparing, research, finding this team, and then even dealing with the prodromal. I mean,
Yeah.
that could be defeating within itself, and you're so tired, but then you just kept going.
Yeah, I kept doing the things. And that was one thing that my doula and my midwife both commented on. They're like, you did everything that
Yeah,
you
you did.
could, and you tried to control everything that you can control. And like, look what happened. Like, that's amazing.
Well, thank you again so
Thank you.
much.
I'm so happy to have been able to talk to you and share my story.
Me too. Do you have any final advice to any of our listeners?
I think my ultimate advice for any birthing person is to find a provider that you align with. I think that they can really make or break that experience. No matter where you choose to birth or where you wind up birthing, have that provider that you trust, that you feel like you can have open conversations with. If you say you want a natural birth, like they're not going to scoff at that. Somebody that's going to have conversations with you instead of like talking at you.
I agree so much. And, I want to add to just vet them. Like, if they're feeling good at first, okay, stay. And if something's happening, like, keep going, keep asking the questions. And
Yeah.
if something's not feeling right, don't hesitate to change.
I know. And I not only hesitated, but I like I knew I had to change with my first provider, and I just didn't. I think at that
Yeah.
point I was so tired.
Yeah.
So,
Well, it's daunting. It's a
yeah.
daunting thing. And I mean, I was there too. So,
Yeah.
no shame in it. It's just like, it's just hard when you realize, like, looking back, oh, I could have, should have done something different, didn't, but that's okay. We learned, we've grown, and we've had healing experiences moving forward.
Yes.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to the vbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.